VentureCast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm worried that they're going to go out in five. Randall's hurt, and this team has got a lot of holes.
All right,
I love this team, but I mean, it's got a lot of holes.
I think the Celtics will sweep the Hawks, though. That's a 4-0.
This NBA corner update has been brought to you by Smoothie King.
Come on, people love it. People want to hear like what we're about other than music. I think it's important.
People love it. I will show you the check, Jeff. They don't love it. All right.
First of all, there's a physical, actual check. This podcast is a runaway hit. It has generated actual income, making it different than 98% of other podcasts.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
I keep falling for the weather
I really
report
do.
Every time. He's like,
he said it was 95 a week ago in Asheville, North Carolina. You should.
I'll admit that did say that seems strange. I'll admit
that seems that, suspicious.
That I was like,
Well, welcome to 50 Years of Music with 50-year-old white guys here on the Electricast Podcast Network. We have traveled down to New Orleans here in our minds to give you the very best of the music scene. Once again, I am out of my depth. I need to get back to like Pittsburgh and Toronto. Like, these are heavy hitters. Nashville, Memphis, New Orleans. Holy smokes.
Yeah, don't worry. North Dakota is coming up. So that'll
I need a little
North equalize Dakota things.
Just
maybe
lot.
We can go back to Boston.
Hey,
yeah,
wait,
I don't know if we fully covered that area completely.
I was actually talking to Indy about it, and I was like, I'm really enjoying it. Like, the last couple ones have been fantastic. And she was like, maybe it's because you left New England. And I was like, that might be it.
Okay.
That might be it.
Okay. Listen, we could have done New Hampshire. That would have been next. Well, welcome, gentlemen. Are you doing well, first of all? A midweek, midday podcast. Jeff?
Fine. Actually, yeah, good. It's fun to do one while the sun is high in the sky. It's beautiful out, and I got the house to myself. It's spring break for me, but no one else, so I'm having a risky business-esque, you know, day.
okay that's plenty. Thank you for the visual.
He's in his undies right now.
I am.
Ben, you doing well?
He's taking those old records off the shelf.
Sliding across the floor. Hey, gentlemen, our first Electricast paycheck came through just an hour ago. Woo!
Nice.
And I have good news. Our mission of connecting and being a part of each other's lives is still the cornerstone of the podcast.
That does not surprise me at all.
Yeah, it's great, but it is fascinating to see like who the advertisers are and when they come in. And it's fascinating. I'll have to go over the data with you at some point.
Thank you, marketing.
So sadly, one of you is going to have to go. We can't keep two of the talents on. So it all comes down to the food section of this podcast.
It's been nice knowing you all. I'll catch
you
on
sure?
the
first. I thought we were going to do a cage match, like just 2 men enter, 1 man leaves.
That's I can't
right.
do that either.
Well, Jeff Simons, let's
Jim's
welcome
been doing
us.
Yoga for like 25 years. Like I give before it even starts. I can't imagine how like your core strength would just snap me in half before we even got started.
Let's get Steve Earle, This City, as our arrival song here in New Orleans. He's going to set the mood.
This city won't wash away. This city won't ever drown. Blood and water and hell to pay. Sky tear open and pain rain down. Let medics come when they. I ever won't leave this town. This city won't wash away. This city won't ever drown.
All right. Jeff, I haven't asked. Have you been to New Orleans?
I have. A couple of times.
Ben, how many times?
Three times. Oh, no, okay. Four times.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, me too. So we've all got a fairly decent experience there. Thumbs up, Jeff Simons.
Oh, yeah, totally. I have two pre-Katrina visits, though. So it's been a long time for me. And talking to people who have been post, it seems like it's a pretty different experience going now. So,
well, I've got three pre, one post, last year. It's really coming back. It's really extraordinary in the way it's come back. The population of New Orleans before Katrina hit. Does anyone know?
Several hundred thousand, like 450,000, something like that.
Excellent. 455,000 in New Orleans. How many right now?
I don't know now. I know it was under 100 for a long time post-Katrina, but I don't know how much of a snapback we've got.
It's all the way back to 376,000.
Come on now.
Yeah. Let's go.
Although don't mistake it, it's not the same people. I mean, I'm not saying sure. I mean that as praise.
But. Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, how it's recovered is a different story. All right, well let's get into things. The nine foods one must try in New Orleans. I'm going to name all nine, and you're going to pick your top three out of these nine.
Okay, oh, I thought you were going to make us try to name the nine.
I'm not really going to do that. No.
I think right. Ben would come close. I would bet.
All right. Well,
let's
see how many you get out of the nine. Go ahead. Brainstorm.
All right, well, obviously, there's going to be the beignets.
Yep.
Po' boys.
Yep.
Muffalettas.
Okay.
Gumbo.
Yep.
Jambalaya.
Yes.
Where are we at?
Five.
Oh, we didn't get that's five. Okay, we gotta get to nine, huh?
Yeah.
Shrimp etouffee or shrimp.
I was gonna say etouffee.
You guys are killing me. I cut the two foods I couldn't pronounce, muffalettas and etouffee. So so really it's 11, but I was like, oh, we're doing nine. You guys exposed me in the first 5 minutes of the podcast, killing me.
Are there other desserts besides the beignets?
The Bananas Foster is
excellent.
The classic.
Excellent. Bananas Foster, pralines, king cakes.
Oh, that I can't believe we missed that.
Red beans and rice.
Oh, of course. If you give me 2 seconds, I would have gotten that Monday night.
And then turtle soup, which I've never had turtle soup. So give me your top three out of those. What do you like out of that?
The best red beans and rice I've ever had in my life was Monday night in New Orleans. It was so good. I could have taken a bath in it. So I love that. I don't dislike any of those foods, to be honest. The muffalette is a little too much bread for me. Muffalette is like 90% bread and 10% good stuff. So that one I don't love as much as other people do.
Okay.
I went to New Orleans most recently with my five other buddies from Knoxville who celebrated each other's birthdays. And I forgot the name of the place. I think maybe it's Gerard's. Anyhow, it's an old-fashioned 1928 white tablecloth.
All the waiters
wear tuxedos place. And we got Bananas Foster for the table. So it would not be my favorite. It's not actually my favorite, but I just can't recommend it highly enough. It was the funniest thing of all time. Like this dude comes out in the full tuxedo and he's got this like wheeling tray and he's pouring all this alcohol in. There's flame everywhere. He's burning his bananas in front of you. And like he does this, it's just like a bus driver. You know what I mean? Like he does this all night. His job is just burn bananas all day and all night. And I'm just like, damn, that's a good job. It's super fun. Like he had a whole patter with it. You know what I mean? Like he had a whole rap prepared for us. Like, where are you guys from? And whoosh.
It's like the little volcano onion at Japanese Steakhouse where they're totally smacking it
sure
in front of you.
Sure. Oh, that's really fun. Yeah, a lot of great, great restaurants in New Orleans. Helen and I
would say that Crystal
it.
Hot Sauce, I would replace my blood with Crystal Hot Sauce if I could. I'd
Crystal
put that
Hot
on.
Sauce? I don't know that.
Oh, you've never had it? It's the New Orleans hot sauce, and it's spectacular. It tastes good on just about everything, and many a school lunch is greatly improved with
yes.
a big splattering of Crystal Hot Sauce.
That is excellent. All right, well, let's get to the compilation contest, gentlemen. This is the torture basement has been moved to the back porch because it's such a beautiful day and no one else is home. So we're out here and you have 15 songs that mention New Orleans. And I think you got to get 11 out of these 15. Only two rare tracks. So
all
I'm
right.
Feeling good for the two of you.
Oh, I'm excited about that. Okay, here we go.
Well, I wish I was in New Orleans. There is a house in New Orleans.
As muddy, what's this river that I'm in?
Well, I think I have this
New
one.
New Orleans is sinking, man, and I don't want to swim.
This time I'm walking to New Orleans.
I thought I would too.
I want to get a room in New Orleans. I want to sing in the streets of the French Quarter.
Son of a bush boy. Nerd.
New Orleans in the morning, afternoon, and night.
Hell no.
We ain't all right.
The New Orleans will find us fine.
Jesus left Chicago. And headed down to New Orleans.
I mean, do you even need a second listen?
No.
Wow.
Really? You're going to be that aggressive?
I got 12 slam dunk, I think, on the first listen.
Dang. I mean, maybe.
I did not get the rap one.
Oh, I got the rap one, I think.
Oh, great. Okay, good.
Just from recognizing the voices. I don't know the song and all, but I think I know it.
Hey, I want to say one thing before we go any farther.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you for the Chuck Berry. Anytime you can give me Chuck Berry, it makes me happy. It brings me joy. This is a guy who has like 85 songs where he just lists places.
Yeah, so really
just you he really need to, anytime you get a chance, just help us out. Do it as 16 songs, but I just love hearing Chuck Berry.
He is my go-to. So yeah, Sweet Little 16 also mentions New Orleans. I mean, yeah, he's an almanac for
back
the
in the USA
basement.
In Route 66. I'm literally like, here's some places that I've heard about. I'm just going to list them in order now.
So great. It's so great. All right. Well, Ben, since Jeff is so gosh darn confident, why don't you get us started? See how many you got.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The second one's the animals.
The great. First one is Tom Waits.
Got it.
Yeah, golly. Yes. It is garbly best.
Yeah. Animals is second.
Animals is second. I think the third one's Lynyrd Skynyrd, but I'm going to let
me too.
Jeff overrule me if he wants to.
No, excellent. It's Skynyrd. I'm sure of it.
It is indeed.
I was confused about the fourth one. The fifth one, Little Fats Domino, right?
Yep.
That is correct.
Very nice. The seventh one, which I actually could really use a second listen to. This is one you didn't get, right, Jeff?
No.
Okay.
So loud.
I think the seventh one is Bon Jovi. That's what I think.
Oh, my God.
The
is
seventh
really?
One is Bon Jovi. That's what I think. I think it's like some weird old Bon Jovi solo record.
That is correct. It is John Bon Jovi on his own.
What
singing
year
about
is that?
The Queen of New Orleans.
All right, so let's back up.
I
number
do not know.
Four. Number four is Canada's, I believe it's the Tragically Hip.
Yes, that New Orleans is sinking.
Nice. And then number six is Stevie Nicks.
Yes. Yeah, we
so jumped. We're 7-7. Is that correct?
Unbelievable. Correct.
All right. Well,
I don't think I have eight. The next one I have is Elton John, which I think
oh,
is
10. Eight is the Chili Peppers covering right. The Meters.
Yep.
Nine is Public Enemy. Am I correct?
Hell no, we ain't all right. That is Public Enemy.
Nice. Wow,
I never heard that song,
get.
But I recognized
Flavor
Flav
saying son
that's
of a bush.
That's an amazing get right there.
Good.
And then Elton John is 10, so we're 10-10.
Hold on, and 11. Like,
wait, Ben, I want to let you know with that Elton John song, I tried to pick the most Elton Johnny part of the song. So it was like full dose of Elton John coming at
for
you.
For sure. For
it was
sure.
Awesome.
That one's less appreciated than Chuck Berry, but I did manage to get it. So I can't
yeah,
really
good,
complain.
Good.
I know that Jesus Just Left Sugar, that's a ZZ Top song. Is that ZZ Top doing it?
Fish
it
doing
is Fish
Jesus
doing
Just
it.
Left
yeah.
Chicago.
Oh,
so
wow.
That Tim can put a finger in my eye, which
that's
is
a
just
disaster.
Awesome.
12 is Randy Newman, right?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, then somewhere in here there's one that Jeff didn't get.
Do you have
there's
it?
Two. I don't know the next two, but I have a guess. I mean, the next one is some shitty 90s rock band that makes
oh,
me
I,
want
I
to
I have
put
a guess
myself.
On that one.
Come on, Ben.
Okay. It's like one of the three name bands, like Third Eye Blind or Marcy Playground or one of those
I think
stupid
it's
bands.
Better than Ezra.
Yes.
That's
yeah,
what I think it
is.
I think it's it better is. Than Ezra.
It is indeed better than Ezra. Unbelievable. Are you guys going to run the table?
Well, we're 14 out of 15 because the last one's Chuck Berry, but I do not know who does the big, long Cadillac limousine hotel suite. I mean, it's some Southern rock sadness like the Marshall Tucker Band.
It
or...
is. First of all, it is a great song. It's right from the jump. It's go, go, go. It's called
it
Trudy.
Sounds great. I got to admit.
It's called Trudy. And I recommend you guys listen to it after this podcast. And it is by the Charlie Daniels Band. So that's your one miss. That's not bad. 14
Charlie
out of
Daniels Band is pretty good.
Yeah,
that is pretty good, dude. 14 out of 15 on one listen. That was
unbelievable. Yeah, you didn't that's even have your point. Second listen.
Is it? Dude. It's Alfred Toussaint. Is that the name of the guy?
Alan Toussaint.
Alan Toussaint. Toussaint. Dude, City of New Orleans. That really like. I listened to that this morning in prep. You got to help us out.
Play it
also,
for me, Jeff.
Arlo Guthrie. Right.
Yeah,
his cover though doesn't touch the Toussaint one.
Can you play a little, Jeff?
Okay.
Oh, the angry side from Jeff. Oh.
No, I
thought you were on spring break. What the heck?
I'm sorry. I just like I'm. You're
hey,
just, Mr. Course, just causing more edits for you. Wow. So Spotify does not have. The Alan Toussaint version. It only
no way.
Has
you know what I'm talking about, right?
What?
You've heard that. You've heard the version, right? It's fantastic. Yeah. Oh, that's a bummer. All right.
I listened to that? Alan Toussaint's Southern Nights, and I gotta say I like Glenn Campbell's better.
Have you listened to the record Life, Love, and Faith by Alan Toussaint, Tim? Because if you haven't,
no.
Life Changer, 1972.
It will life, come up. Love, and faith.
Okay. It's going to come up in my New Orleans moment. But, super, super. That's must listen.
All right. Well, let's move on. Ben Barton, can you give me a nickname of New Orleans?
The Crescent City.
Excellent. Can you give me another one, Jeff Simons?
No. Nolens? I mean, no.
Oh, okay. I got another one.
What do you got?
The Big Easy.
The Big Easy is correct.
My brain is.
You can also go with NOLA. I feel like
NOLA.
That's a
NOLA. Ben is on fire here. And the last one, the city that Care forgot. Just to explain
that's harsh.
The breezy way
home,
about
home of Smoothie Rose. King. I thought that was the other name. By the way, we are recording this after the Pelicans choked the play-in game last night.
That is correct.
Sorry for the Pels fans out there, but they deserve to lose that game for sure.
With Zion sitting on the bench because he's not sure if he's mentally ready.
That interview
that's not true. It's not a generous take on it at all.
He said, I'm fully healthy. I'm just not Zion yet, and I'm not getting back in the court until I'm full Zion. I don't care if that's real or not. You cannot – the day of a playoff elimination game, you can't be like, oh, I'm fine. I'm just not Zion yet. Like, get out there. Take some shots.
Okay. Well, so they've had a hard time getting on the same page, him and management. But
they sure have.
Like, the GM of the team was like, he's not cleared. He can't play. We're not going to have him play while he's still rehabbing this muscle injury. So it's a communication problem, not an actual problem. I don't think he's a bad guy. And also, we got to see him when we went to New Orleans. I got tickets, and Zion played. So I can't describe how great it is to see Zion.
he's amazing.
He doesn't play. It's like Embiid's first three seasons. It's like, you know, little peak and then gone.
Sadly, though, it's four seasons. He's been in the NBA for four seasons. He's played 100 games.
Oh, I mean, it's really not good.
And I saw one of them, though, so it worked out great for me. I mean, it was like watching Lawrence Taylor play basketball. It was unbelievable.
I know, right? That might be why he's getting hurt. He just might be weirdly built. Like, he's like Bo Jackson. He's going to tear the muscles off his frame because he's so unbelievably powerful.
Oh, well, he's like this gigantic, and this was the beginning of the season, so not to be mean, he's working his way to shapes. He's still kind of heavy set.
Yeah,
and anytime anybody stood in front of him, he was like, excuse me, like small person. Like,
just get out of the way.
He just was like, get out of the way. But also he dribbled around guards. Like, he's so fast, like lightning quick. It was really insane. And the second jump, I'd read about the second jump beforehand, and seeing it live was so weird. So weird. Like, he comes in for a layup, misses, and then he's back.
He's back up before the next guy. Yeah, that's amazing.
it's like there's two of them. Like, one of them's going down and the other one's going up before the other one even touches the floor. It was crazy. And you could see that it was the Trailblazers they played. You could see the guys in their team were like, wait, what?
What just happened?
Did somebody box him out? Like, how'd that happen? It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So sad to see that team like flame out against the Thunder last night.
And real quick, how did the Kyrie Irving trade work out for Dallas?
How about that? Not so
amazingly
great.
Well.
Amazingly well.
I know. I'm thrilled about it. I like watching the Mavericks suffer is kind of fun. This NBA playoffs is going to be great for this podcast because all three of us are rooting for teams who could make some noise and who are also like flawed enough to make every game thrilling.
The Knicks are scary. The Knicks are scary.
Strong disagree.
No, they are so fast.
Disagree with that too.
Yeah.
Uh-uh. I'm really worried that they're not going to get past Cleveland, but I'm thrilled that they have a good team.
I'm worried that they're going to go out in five. Randall's hurt, and this team has got a lot of holes.
All right.
I love this team, but I mean, it's got a lot of holes.
I think the Celtics will sweep the Hawks, though. That's a 4-0.
This NBA corner update has been brought to you by Smoothie King.
Come on, people love it. People want to hear like what we're about other than music. I think it's important.
People love it. I will show you the check, Jeff. They don't love it.
First of all, there's a physical, actual check. This podcast is a runaway hit. It has generated actual income, making it different than 98% of other podcasts.
All right. Well, let's get to the favorite son or daughter of New Orleans. I didn't even check record sales or stats or anything like that. It's got to be Louis Armstrong. Do we agree?
That sounds good. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, the man invented modern music. So let's go with Louis Armstrong. Should we hit him with "Oh, When the Saints Come Marching In"?
How about "What Did I Do to Be So Black and Blue"?
Okay. Wow, that's a different vibe, but go for it.
That one.
I mean, he's
so let's get to some vocals though. Hold on. I'm just going ahead here a little bit.
You're fine.
Oh, black and blue.
Went too far. Hang on, listen.
Cold empty bed. Spring's on his lid. Feel like old men. Wished I was dead. What did I do to be so black and blue?
There we go.
Wow.
I've got two very brisk Louis Armstrong stories. One is, I think so. It's the early 70s or maybe the late 60s. He's touring Asia. He gets to Thailand and he buys an entire suitcase full of marijuana. He arrives back in the U.S. to customs at then Idlewild Airport, now JFK. And he's carrying in an entire bag of weed. Like, he's got a whole big suitcase of it. And for just whether it's racism or just bad luck or whatever, they pull him off to the side into the special customs area. And he's like, "Ruh-roh, this might not be good." Completely by luck at the same time. So there's like a special area. In walking through the special area comes Richard M. Nixon. Richard M. Nixon is like, "Hold on, is that Satchmo?"
No way.
Yes. He's like, "Mr. President, good to see you." And he's like, "I love you, Satchmo. You're the greatest." And then he's like, "What's going on here?" And they're like, "Oh, he just got randomly selected." He's like, "No, no, no, he's with me. He's with me."
Oh my God.
He waves him through carrying the huge weed. In some versions of the story, Nixon grabs the bag for him and carries it out.
That's fantastic.
He should have handed out one of those badges that he gave Elvis. My God, Nixon's on top of things. What's the other?
What's your other little?
What's your other story?
It's actually related to the song we just heard. Heard an amazing interview with the guy who just wrote into a biography of him on NPR. And the point of the biography and the point of the interview was sort of to reconstruct his life and recapture him as a civil rights icon and a civil rights hero, even though he was very Michael Jordan-esque in his late career. Yeah. Where he was like, "I'm just a famous singer. I'm not here to do any politics at all." Totally unfairly tarnished as an Uncle Tom, or as if he wasn't some kind of massive groundbreaking person who created space for all these other people to come behind him. Just a fantastic, amazing guy.
You know what's amazing about that too is this song, of course, is famous for being in the introduction of Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. It's the song that the Invisible Man is listening to when he gets high and descends into the darkness. And if you want a great description of Louis Armstrong's art, just read that paragraph that Ellison writes. And of course, Ellison finds himself in this exact same space. He is being uncanonized as a conservative Uncle Tomish voice in Black literature. And I think that's a really reductive, generous and inaccurate understanding of that book.
And but heartbreaking, Ellison, heartbreaking, because that book right. is a masterpiece.
Masterpiece. And Ellison's conservatism is unrecognizable from what people think of as being conservative in 2023. And yeah, but it's funny that Ellison's text was my introduction to Louis Armstrong. And now this NPR documentary is trying to reclaim Armstrong. I hope someone does the same for Ellison once the current moment calms down a little bit and reclaims space for nuance. This editorial brought to you by
Smoothie King.
Timmy, where's your transition?
Smoothie King. Perfect.
Brilliant. So I don't have a transition except to say the song I wanted to play was "Oh, When the Saints Come Marching In," so that I could tell my story of being in Jackson Square and going into the they got like a little museum right there where you can learn about the hurricane and the effects of the hurricane. And so Helen and I are going through, and there's a memorial service happening in this kind of function room. I go off to the bathroom. I come back and they've got the band leading all the funeral participants in a line all the way around through the museum. And who's in it but my wife, Helen, who has been grabbed by the mourners who are, "Oh, when the saints go marching," who are having a gay old time. And they grabbed my wife because apparently in New Orleans, if you happen upon a funeral procession, you're supposed to just kind of join in and celebrate the person's life. So that's what Helen got to do.
Timmy, I think it helps if you're good looking. that's some praise for your wife right there.
Wait, I love the reason they grab you. Everybody's thinking the same thing.
It wasn't because you're in the bathroom. You know what I'm saying?
No, I think it was because Tim was in the bathroom.
And that guy's gone. Let's go ahead and start it up.
The good looking quotient went up.
That's a fair point. All right. What to do in New Orleans should you find yourselves there? Gentlemen, either of you, Jeff, you probably didn't because you haven't been there in a while. But Ben, did you go to the National World War II Museum?
I did. I really liked it. Oh. There's some parts of it that are kind of cheesy, but overall, I found it to be a really spectacular museum.
Really spectacular. I mean, you lose yourself for hours in all these stories and it's one of those things where I'm just not familiar with the war in the Pacific.
Oh, dude, I was going to say the same exact thing.
Yeah, to go through that section, it's like, oh, my God, I learned so much. And it's really overwhelming what U.S. troops did in the Pacific.
Yeah, so they've got two different parts. They've got a bunch of parts, but there's a European theater and a Pacific theater. And I was amazed by how much I knew about the European theater. I've lived that history. I knew it all. I mean, and there's an amazing D-Day section, which, of course, I also knew that backwards and forwards. Then you go across the hallway to the Asian one, and you're like, oh, my God, I don't know any of this. And, dude, the extra two or three years of the war where they're fighting island to island, and it's just a bloodbath where, like, they refuse to have any POWs. They're just fighting to the death every step.
Yeah,
like, it's no amazing surrender. It's amazing that we hung in there in the war. Like, it looked really bad.
Really bad. Grisly. And the Japanese were giving no quarter and no surrender. All right. So
I would recommend having a dad who specializes in the Pacific Theater of World War II if you want to deepen your knowledge.
It's a really good point. Yeah, we should have hung out more. All right. Well, we all went to Jackson Square. Lovely.
Yeah.
We all went to the French Quarter. Kind of overwhelming at times. I love Frenchman Street. I love the music clubs and venues there, but the French Quarter is a scene.
Would you? I didn't dig Bourbon Street at night, but I dug the French Quarter all the way through it.
Oh, the architecture's terrific. Quick story. We went to the Super Bowl Patriots versus Packers in 95. And my buddy Dave and I get separated from everybody else. But there is a bar there. What do you know? They had a drink special. And so we went in. We get called in by these bartenders. Like, come on. So it's a buy one, get two free. 16-ounce beer special. It's a 16-ounce beer special. So it's like, you know, it's like Ben Franklin walking around with the puffy rolls just coming on from Boston. I'm walking around with all these beers and I go up on the balcony and Dave and I are just sitting there cuddling our beers and trying to drink out of the big one. And who walks on the street down below but my mother, who is also at the Super Bowl because my stepfather's the team doctor. And apparently in that moment, she was saying to her husband, look at all these drunks. Look at these people. They're hanging over the balconies, just a bunch of drunk Timmy. And that's how I met up with my mother in New Orleans.
Your timing, by the way, running into your mom at inopportune moments is its own amazing story.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happens to you.
That's going to be the next podcast. It's going to be great. And then did you guys make it into the Ninth Ward at all?
I did. I have a pretty great story in that regard. I spent a week in New Orleans with some friends, and one of them's a clarinet player. This was in 1995.
Okay.
And I went to see him play, and then we went to Preservation Hall, and then he was like, are you up for a late night? And the answer, of course, is in 1995 is absolutely. He's like, I have a good friend who is a pretty amazing trumpet player, and he's playing a tiny place, and we're going to give him a ride and hang out there. It was Monday night, so it was like, it'll be $2 to get in and all the red beans and rice you can eat. And his name was Kermit Ruffins.
No kidding.
And so wow. I jumped in the back of a pickup truck with Kermit Ruffins and drove deep into who knows where.
Parked. The bayou.
Yeah. And my friend and I, you know, watched Kermit Ruffins in a pickup band play for 3.5-4 hours. And got back when the sun came up.
That is great. That's a good story. I happened upon a bar in 95 where a little band was playing named Galactic, and they had just formed the year before. So I was transfixed by Galactic and had a great old time. If you like music, go to New Orleans. Hey, can I ask you guys a quick question? Then we'll get to our three songs. We often talk on the show, or you guys often talk on the show, about musicianship without soul is kind of empty. Like Whitney Houston, you all said, is empty calories. Steely Dan, yeah, great musicians, but there's nothing there.
I'm more of a Steely Dan fan than Bennett.
Okay. But I want to ask you about the aspect of musicianship that is just about being better than the next guy. And when last time we went, Helen and I went to see a band play, and the one-upsmanship I thought was just fascinating. Like, oh, you think you're pretty good with your saxophone? Check me out on the trumpet. And then the trombone's like, oh, let me have a say. I mean, it's a fascinating thing. I'm not saying it's empty calories. I'm not saying they don't have a soul, but I do think musicianship is incredibly valued and prized in New Orleans, bragging rights.
Well, I think those are two different things, to be honest. Like, a great band has great players and they're talking to each other, but I don't know if they're trying to one-up each other. Like, there's definitely a who's the fastest thing, especially in jazz, right? Like, are you as fast as, like, I mean, there are these markers of technical brilliance, and if you can get to that level, you're a special player. But the best moments like that actually are kind of co-encouraging. Like, somebody rips one and then the next, they're hoping the next guy can equal or maybe take it to a next level, and then they'll pass it around again and pass it around again. But I have to be in the right mood to listen to that for a really long time. I'll admit, I have much more of a tolerance for just the long solo than Ben does. I mean, I really, when somebody's really great and I think they're going somewhere with it, I really actually can get into it and enjoy it. And so some of those kind of jazz shows where you have great players doing that for one another. But if it's just like a pretty good band and they're just following the rules of engagement of a jazz, like play the head, everybody gets a turn, play the head again and stop. I feel like that can be like a blues show. It can get kind of tedious for me.
Timmy, before we leave places to visit, Preservation Hall, strong recommend. I know Jeff.
Right. Me too. I love it.
Every time I go, I go. And every time I go, I love it. There's a part of it that's weirdly cheesy, but it's even better because it's cheesy. Like, it's so good. It's so good. It's basically, I saw these old-fashioned and actually old musicians in New Orleans. Yeah. They do four shows a day, and it is a little bit of a tourist trap, and they trot you in and trot you out and trot you in and trot you out. But the sheer raw, and also they mix and match. Like every time I've seen them, there's a different group of guys, and they've got a whole like traveling group that come in and do it. Saw them at Bonnaroo, which is super fun. Anyhow, they just, it's a show. It's an old fashioned, super entertaining, unbelievably good show. And if you're in New Orleans, you can't miss it.
And have you, Ben, have you seen the Rebirth Brass Band, which is kind of the next generation version of that?
No, I have not.
Oh, they are amazing. I went and saw them at the Independent. I actually saw them right after Katrina happened. And they were, you know, they were touring because they had no homes. And in the middle of the show, they got quiet. And the guy was like, hey, who here is from New Orleans? And then, of course, the San Francisco crowd, like, what? And he was like, oh, yeah, show me your fucking FEMA cards. Right. And it gets really quiet. He's like, I didn't think so. And he went on this long thing like, I'm glad you're having a good time. And we're here to spread some love. But like, this culture is in dire trouble of dying out. And we are going to save it. It was really moving. And they just played their absolute asses off for 3 hours. I've never been more tired after a show than when I saw the Rebirth Brass Band. They pulverized us.
Show us your FEMA card. Wow.
I know, right?
The other one I'll add is the Whitney Plantation, which is outside New Orleans.
Right.
Is a historically sugarcane plantation that they've redone in careful detail, focusing on the lives of the slaves. And the dude who gave us the tour was a descendant. And you can't, well, actually, you can believe. Whatever you think sugarcane farming is like in New Orleans under slavery, it's so much worse.
Oh my god!
It's one of the most dangerous harvests there is, because you have to use the machete with that metal brace against your leg, and if you have any kind of slippage, you just cut your foot off, and like
the cooking.
Packed. It is packed with snakes and crocodiles and everything else. Like they one of the reasons why it was like it was so expensive and so dangerous is because they just like to die. Like you had like a 2 or 3 year life cycle of doing this unbelievably dangerous, horrible work. And I've done a tour of a mine where they enslaved people. And I was like, I don't know which is worse. Horrible, like so unbelievably horrible and dangerous. But anyhow, it's an amazing, super powerful experience to see the quarters, look at the way they lived, and then understand the physical work that they did, just like unimaginable.
And that's the Whitney Plantation?
Yeah.
How did they have like weddings and stuff there?
I actually don't know the answer to that.
No, that was a terrible joke.
I don't want to know the answer to that.
It is the what? No, it's in the South, a lot of people find a plantation to get married at because the venue is so beautiful. The Whitney does not do that. The Whitney's like, no.
You know what's a good day for those weddings? Is Robert E. Lee Day. That'd be a good day to have a plantation wedding.
Did you check it? Yeah.
No, it's still bothering me though. Like I was driving somewhere randomly the other day and I was like, Robert E. Lee Day?
It's the third Monday in January. You bet. Because it's a federal holiday. It's MLK Day. And so what they did is they stuck their noses in their state's rights and made it a combined holiday. All right, gentlemen, let's go. What are our three favorite moments, songs, artists from New Orleans? You're pointing at Ben?
He let me go first last time. So
All right.
So last time we did Robert Johnson and we learned about African-American music and hell. And today we take a little trip to heaven with our gal, Mahalia Jackson, born October 1911 in New Orleans. Her mom and dad are not married. Her father's a stevedore, and her mother does a laundry and other hustles. Her mom dies, and she lives in a house with 13 other people in a shotgun shack in the 16th Ward. Mom dies when she's 5. Taken in by her mom's sister, Aunt Duke. She lives with Aunt Duke until she's 15 or 16. Aunt Duke is a super severe woman, very, very religious and not light on the cane. So she's just like really taking in some Holly as she's growing up. She attends Mount Moriah Baptist Church, where she first sings in the choir. She is the grandchild of enslaved people on both sides. And her grandfather, a former slave, is an occasional fill-in pastor at this church. At 16, things get so bad with Aunt Duke that she moves out. She's itinerant in New Orleans. Oh, by the way, she has to drop out of school at 10 to work in the laundry. At 16, she moves out. She's wandering, sleeping on couches and with various family members in New Orleans, follows another one of her aunts up to Chicago. So this is another classic great migration story. You can imagine arriving at Chicago at 16 when you've never left New Orleans is not a great time for her. Freezing cold, miserable. There's all these big city folk. She's very confused by it all. She finds her home in the Greater Salem Baptist Church. And that's where she again takes up singing and eventually becomes what she called a fish and bread singer, which is just an all-time name for this. So she's wow. doing various odd jobs and just going around to various churches singing with groupings of different gospel people. The most common one was the Johnson Singers, who's a quartet where she fronts a piano, bass, drums, jazz thing behind her. And basically it's fish and bread because that's what she goes to get. She goes for the fish fries, gets the fish. That's how she earns her keep, is out there singing at it. In 1937, she gets four singles put out on Decca Records. Not big sales, and that just kind of dies there. And the talk about an amazing American story. This whole time, she's like working, singing, hustling. She gets married. She gets divorced. She buys an apartment building and she's a landlord. Like she's just like inching out up the level, getting a little bit more wealthy, a little bit more wealthy, dragging her ass through the depression. In 1946, she gets her big break. She goes and plays at the Apollo Theater in Harlem. That's the first big break. Second big break is she gets signed to the Apollo Records by the scout who just watches the acts come through the Apollo Theater and sign them. And then the third big break, life-changing big break, is she now has enough money to hire a touring band. And there's one person who tours with her from 1946 until she dies, Mildred Falls, her piano player. And when you hear the Mahalia Jackson cuts, listen to the piano. Like, this woman is an unbelievably spectacular, super awesome piano player. And from there, it's off to the races. Like, she has a hit that hits number two on the pop charts. She is by a mile the most popular gospel singer and arguably the most popular African-American singer of this period from 1946 all the way up until, you know, like we get into the late 50s when other people start coming on the scene. She has massive crossover to white audience. She's the headliner of the Newport Jazz Festival in 57 and 58. And there's a movie made about her performance in 58 that comes out in 59. She, again, keeps spreading her business wings. She had a Mahalia Jackson chicken dinners, frozen dinner company.
Let's go.
And a bunch of canned food from New Orleans that she sold, like with Mahalia Jackson smiling on it. Like,
that is unbelievable.
Brian my collard greens, like, just makes me so happy for her.
That's amazing.
The best. Yeah, totally. She never went pop. She never there's a famous, possibly apocryphal story where she was playing vaudeville theaters and then her grandfather got sick and she swore to God that she would never play another like non-religious set if her grandfather got better, and he did, and she never did. She never wavered on that. She's a gospel act her entire life. I got her the box set, which I strongly recommend. And that was what really turned me on to it. Just like fantastic, unbelievably beautiful voice, clear progenitor to rock and roll and soul music and the Motown sound and the Stax sound. Like, you'll really hear it. As I've come to enjoy her even more, she is an unbelievable live act, and I would just strongly recommend any chance you get to listen to the live versions of the song. So Mildred Falls, her piano player, would play with one hand and watch Mahalia with her eyes rather than looking at the piano. And they were like, why do you do that? And she was like, well, first, I never know when she's going to start or stop or the rhythm or when she's going to speed up. And you'll hear it in the song that I'm going to choose. Like Didn't It Rain is the song that I'm going to choose. I'm going to have to tell Jeff the exact length of it because there's like 8 different live versions of it that go from 2 minutes to 7 minutes. And they're really different. And Mildred Falls would say, she would tell me to change the key. She would point at me and point up, and I'd have to change the key while I was playing. She felt it out as she was going.
This is in the
Fish and Bread days. She would actually get in trouble at places because she sang so passionately, and she like has this like little kind of slinky move where she's moved by the spirit. But for many of the Chicago churches of the established African-American community were really, really, really very staid. And so the new Southern churches that came up, there's like a big like culture clash between them. Super interesting. Jeff, if you will do, it's Didn't It Rain Live. And on Spotify, it's in the Essential Mahalia Jackson, and it's 3:42.
The silence is me finding this track. I got it. Everybody ready?
All right. No, hold on. Okay. Well, you can start at the very beginning so you can hear the quiet part. But the better thing is go to 2:30, which is where she winds up. Then there's a bunch of applause. Then she kicks back in and then tears the house down.
All right. Here we go.
So first of all, just I want to recall out Mildred Falls. Did you hear that freaking piano playing?
Yeah.
Fats Domino in 1950.
Yeah.
It's
unbelievably
amazing. And the reason I love like the part where she makes it up as she goes along. So she ends the song. There's the applaud. And then you hear the like arrhythmic clapping. Like she's not clapping on the rhythm. And then when she kicks back in, you can hear the piano's wrong for the first like 7 seconds. She's like, what the hell's happening? And then she locks in, and then they're just off to the races, Fantastic. There's a bunch of the songs are slower. A bunch of the songs are calmer, but this sound is completely in there. I mean, she just tears the roof off of the place. The descriptions of her live shows are like people weeping, people rolling in the aisles, people being born again, freaking out, speaking in tongues. And when you hear this song, I'm like, yeah, I believe it. Like if there's a version of God Here on Earth, I think I just heard it live.
What year was that, Ben?
It's somewhere in the 50s.
It is. Okay. That was spectacular.
Yeah. Well, the master class from Ben, very little to add.
Isn't she the one who gets Martin Luther King Jr. to improvise?
She is indeed.
Tell him about the dream.
Yep. She was there the whole time.
And
he goes
off script. Unbelievable.
She and another gospel act came down to Selma during the bus boycott and just stayed at a buddy and did shows every night to support the people. Incredible.
She's also in Summer of Soul, the Questlove documentary. She's singing and she's not feeling well. And so she hands the song over to Mavis Staples, says, I'm feeling a little poorly, child. You got to sing this one for me. Have you seen?
Oh.
I mean,
Like I'm tearing up just thinking about it. When Mavis Staples tells that story, she grabs my arm and she's like, you're going to have to carry me tonight.
Oh,
you could see it in the film.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's just like, it's just one of those hairs on the back of your neck. Like, you can't believe you get to witness it. Yeah, Mahalia is, you know, I don't know how much gospel music our readers listen to. But gospel music is one of those genres where it really matters who you listen to. I feel the way about gospel music the way I kind of feel about reggae music. There's a handful of artists that I find transcendent, and then there's a whole lot of stuff that I feel like is at a different level because it's so focused on the expectations of the art form rather than pushing against it or creating it. And there are so many versions of these songs, How I Got Over and Take My Hand, Precious Lord, and I'm Not Tired Yet, and I Found the Answer. And like, if you look these songs up, you'll see them, and you'll see them sung by people you've heard of. I agree with Ben that Mahalia Jackson is the Bob Marley of gospel, in the sense that there's a transcendent quality to the art that transcends the genre that most people attribute it to.
All right. Pretty great. What do you got, Jeff?
All right,
Simon?
Jeff, what are you doing, man?
And see. Well, mine's I'm gonna bring us forward into the mid-60s and early 70s.
Okay.
And I'm gonna play some grooves, Timmy. We're gonna put you not in the torture basement, but the funk milkshake. Are you ready?
Okay.
So I'm gonna play some songs, and I want you to tell me if and when you recognize them. Okay.
Got it.
All right. Here we go. I'll start with some ones that I think you might get.
Okay. Yeah, I got it.
Lady Marmalade by LaBelle.
Got it.
Okay, here we go. Ready?
Sneaking Sally through the alley. Good.
Robert Palmer. Okay.
Oh, might have been the wrong place. Might have been the wrong time. Something like that.
Dr. John, very good. A little, maybe a little bit more.
Ooh. Ooh. Ooh, I don't know this. I like it.
That's Alan Toussaint's Going Down from the Live Life.
Oh, second Toussaint reference.
Let's
we
go.
Must be in New Orleans. I love it.
We got this one.
Don't know it.
That's our man Lee Dorsey, who did doing Yes We Can Can. He also does Ya Ya and Working in a Coal Mine.
Working
the reason I wanted
mine.
To play you Lee Dorsey, Alan Toussaint, Dr. John, and LaBelle, and Robert Palmer is that's all the same backing band. All those tracks.
Wow.
Same four guys in the background, known collectively as the Meters. The Meters form in 1965, Zigaboo Motolesti on the drums, George Porter Jr. on the bass, Leo Nocentelli on the guitar, and Art Neville on keyboards. They're an instrumental group for the first 5 years, and their debut record in 1969 is as important, maybe not, is the if James Brown is the one of inventing funk music, you could make an argument that the Meters' first record is the 1A or the two. The Meters' self-titled 1969 record, all instrumentals, most famously this song, which is called Sissy Strut. This is where I know that song. This is soul music becoming funk music. This is Booker T and the MGs becoming something different, right?
Okay.
These guys, they make a bunch of their own hits, but they're also just all over so much great music for the next 12 years. For me, this is the sound of New Orleans that I like best. I love the early jazz stuff. I love some other things, but there's just something about the way these guys put a groove together that I find inexhaustibly entertaining. And there are so many great meter songs, Look a Pot Pie and Nine Till Five and Chicken Strut and Tippy Toes and Cabbage Alley and Hey Pocky Way and Africa and Fire on the Bayou and Liar. I mean, you could make a 2-hour mix of just meters classics that would do you absolutely no harm. And then they play on some great 70s records, records that have aged so spectacularly, right? There's 70s music that's fun, and there's 70s music that you put it on and you're like, wow, that sounds instantly great still. And I think it's because the meters, first of all, having tried to play these songs in a lot of different contexts, they are so hard to play. To play these songs well, to not play them like a shitty cover band, takes a precision and skill and attention that you're not right. prepared for until you find yourself in that groove, that bump, ba-da-da, bump, 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 ba-da-da-da, bump. It's so slow. It is so much slower than you think it is. I'm going to play Sissy Strut again, and you're going to clap along, and you're going to be like, good Lord, this is slower than I thought. This is music you can just bop side to side. It is so intentional. And that groove's taking that funk groove and just slowing it down to the point where there's so much space. The fifth instrument in a meter song is silence, is the silence between the notes and the silence these guys allow to transpire, right? It's the opposite of what you were describing, Timmy, right? With this like virtuosity run wild. Like, don't be fooled. The meters can play their asses off. And there are mid-70s meters tracks where they just go for broke. It's just a hilarious, like, it's 100 miles an hour, but the meters at their best is the excellence of restraint, right? Listen how deliberate and careful this groove is.
Yeah!
You hear every hi-hat hit. Faster, and it's toothpaste commercial background music. Check this out. There's enough time in the groove for the drummer to grab the hi-hat and silence it before he plays the next bump, spada, bump, bump, bump. It's just, I love this band. I love the sound that they make. I love the records they play on. I love that they bring their personality to these sessions. The best Robert Palmer record is the one the meters play on. The best LaBelle record is the one that the meters play on. The best Alan Toussaint record is the one the meters play on. And those records sound like those artists, but they're buoyed up and made better by the profound excellence of the band that they hire. And it's one of the things that really pisses me off about modern music is famous people will bring a guest in and then make the guest do the stuff they wanted to hear instead of letting the guest be the guest, right? That was the number one rule I made for my own record is when I asked friends to play on it, I used whatever they gave me. I didn't give them notes. I didn't tell them what I heard. I was like, I want you to be you because you being you will make my own song better.
Right.
And it's just the lost art of genuine collaboration. It's why we love Phoebe Bridgers, right? Who's a genuine collaborator, right? That New Boy Genius record sounds like them. It doesn't sound like they're taking turns being one another.
Right.
And that's why the record is so good. And that's why the meters are my favorite New Orleans contribution. And the more I learn about them, like this is one of those Spotify things where there's a collection called The Absolute Complete Meters, 1968 to 1977, which is every goddamn thing those guys play on. It's like 6 hours long. And I'm like, great. Love it. Yeah, thank you for putting this together. I'm going to hit play and go on with my day. So yeah, the meters are my pick.
Wow. Good stuff. Ben, you familiar with them?
Yeah. Huge fan. Jeff hit it. It's fantastic.
I love, now, are they're Robert Palmer's backing band, the ones in the Addicted to Love video?
That's not them. What's amazing about Robert Palmer is he has the meters for that first record, and then he has Little Feet for the next two backing him up. Like, Robert Palmer is secretly terrific in the 70s. Like that Addicted to Love stuff kind of tarnished his reputation.
Oh, did it ever.
There are two dozen Robert Palmer songs from his first five records, which tear the roof off. And I had no idea because my introduction to Robert Palmer was The Power Station and Addicted to Love. I just assumed he sucked.
Simply Irresistible.
I was like, so much of his early stuff is so great. And it's just, you know, you have to go back and find it. So
first of all, I still say all the time, some like it hot and some heat is on. That's one that I say all the time. And then your teeth grind.
I know.
Oh boy.
That's good stuff. The other one that cracks me up is Simply Irresistible.
It's so bad.
Because you can't sing along to it because the second part is on the first part. See, I just remember people going, Simply Irresistible, so bad. You can't do both parts. You have to pick which one you're doing.
Oh, I am sorry. I hijacked the conversation. The Meters are awesome. I can't wait to dive into that 6 hours of listening pleasure. Good stuff. Well, we're going to wrap this up. I want to wrap it up with Congo Square. If you do get a chance to go to New Orleans, go ahead and get a pay for the tour, a walking tour of Treme. And it starts right there in Congo Square. And it's like the history of music laid out before you. Congo Square is where, I guess, on Sundays, slaves had the day off. And that was where they were allowed to congregate. And they would bring drums and have rhythms. And really, that's going to lead to jazz. Oh, and before that, this is what blew my mind. This was the gathering place for local Indians in the like 1300s and 1400s. This is where they would have their corn harvest. And then it eventually becomes the city of New Orleans and Congo Square. And then just off of Congo Square is what is now a laundromat. And that laundromat at one time was J&M Recording Studio. And in 1955 at J&M Recording Studio, just off Congo Square, which brings us back centuries with African drum music, you have in J&M Recording Studio, apparently run by a Tulane dropout, this Italian guy who just had some equipment, and African-American artists would come in and record music. And one of them was Little Richard. And so we're going to listen to Tutti Frutti, Jeff Simons.
Oh, come on, Timmy!
Of Congo Square. Mojo Magazine calls this number one out of the top 100 songs that changed the world. Number one.
Wah, bam, bloom, bam, 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 tutti frutti, oh, who? Bum, bum, bum. I got a girl named Sue. She knows just what to do. I got a girl named Sue. She knows just what to do. She rock to the east, she rock to the west, but she's the girl that I love best. Tutti frutti, oh Rudy. Tutti frutti, oh Rudy. Tutti frutti, oh Rudy.
How old was Little Richard when he does that?
I have no idea, but that is so great. I actually think there's a 1957 is the first year that rock and roll produces a long playing record that holds up to the time. Before that, it's all singles, but whoever makes the first great long playing record, it's a fight between the first Ray Charles record, the first Chuck Berry's on top. Uh-huh. And here's Little Richard. Oh, and the Chirping Crickets, the first Buddy Holly long player. But those four, that's when rock and roll like goes from singles only to being able to like create like a 35-minute like listening experience.
Right.
Here's Little Richard is one of those few 50s long playing records that holds up gate to gate. That record is terrific.
He's 23 when he records Tutti Frutti.
23.
Yeah. Crushes it.
Jeff, is that your favorite Little Richard song?
Me? No, I like Long Tall Sally.
Oh, Long I have good Sally. Golly, Miss Molly, because I sure like the ball.
Yeah, that sounds
amazing. Line of all
and rip it up. I don't know how to choose.
Good Lord, is that like an NWA song? Like, how did that come out?
I know it's a ball?
They let that get played on the radio. What did they think he was talking about?
I know. It's really amazing that that one got through. It's the same as Shake, Rattle, and Roll. Like, Shake, Rattle, and Roll's got a couple of lines where you're like, really?
Nothing as bad as I sure like to ball.
Yeah, I know. That's true. That one's really on the nose, isn't it?
Before basketball had really taken off. All right. That was a fun episode, gentlemen.
Well done, Timmy, as always.
Good stuff. Awesome. Good stuff. Can't wait to get back together next week or the week after. I don't know where we're going yet.
Dude, let's continue on to Texas.
Just keep going.
We're
keep
just
going.
Right next door.
Keep going west.
Go west, young man. I love it.
Actually, I know nothing about Houston and what the music scene was like in Houston. But Houston, big city. Yeah.
I'm not from Houston, but I rap a lot, so it'll be good.
Let's go. All right, gentlemen. Good stuff. Great seeing you.
Thanks, friends. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.
Go Warriors.
Are you a fan of classic cinema or a young person who wants to discover the best films of all time? Do these legendary movies still hold up?
On the Generation Film Podcast, two guys who grew up when movies dominated the culture share a great film with a panel of young movie lovers and see how it plays for today's generation.
We discuss changes in storytelling styles, representation,
the making of each film, its initial reception, and how its meaning has changed over the years.
Join us as we explore cinema classics across generations on Generation Film.
Electric Acid. Today is working for me. Do you believe that for yourself? Hey, I'm Pastor Julie, and I want to empower you through encouragement, inviting you to my podcast, Big Truth Encouragement, where I unpack living a faith-filled life. I created my podcast for the ladies, but gentlemen, you'll gain something too. So I invite you to listen to Big Truth Encouragement on Electricast and any platform where you listen to your podcast.
Electric Acid. Electric Acid.